This is DS106, Shrinking the Big Questions.
Well, I had a really good year. I decided, hey, why not reward myself? So I bought what I really wanted, a 48-foot cabin cruiser. Now, how much it cost me? I'll tell you how much it cost me. $300,000, not to mention the $20,000 for the custom teak decking. Now, here's my problem. The wife wants to call this incredible vessel Lulu Bell after her mother. Lulu Bell. So I say, no, we call it the Intrepid. So what do you think it should be called? Lulu Bell or the Intrepid?
Roger, at Cornell University, they have an incredible piece of scientific equipment known as the Tunneling Electron Microscope. Now, this microscope is so powerful that by firing electrons, you can actually see images of the atom, the infinitesimally minute building block of our universe. Roger, if I were using that microscope right now, I still wouldn't be able to locate my interest in your problem.
This is DS106, Shrinking the Big Questions. Hello, DS106. We are the Three T's, and this is DS106, Shrinking the Big Questions. I am Mariana Funes. With me, Christina Hendricks, Jess Hobbs, Karen Young, and Rhonda Jessen. Together, we are Tokitina's team, the Three T's.
Well, hi. I posted a big question to ask the Headless 13 Shrink, and it was, what is the meaning of life? And then, I wondered why it is called a shrink anyway, because if they help you with big questions, then maybe they shrink them into little questions. But if then they're just little questions, you can answer them all by yourself, or just use Google.
Let's get on with the show. So, what are the big questions we are shrinking this week? First, we start with the most important question of all. What is the meaning of life? And we have asked our DS106 philosopher, my super true friend Christina, to tackle that one. After tackling such a tasking question, shrinking, we need to recharge and nourish ourselves. So we have part one of our cooking show, where we shrink a most important question. How can we use sausages to shrink the cost of your food budget? Yum, yum, yum. I cannot wait for us to tackle that question. Next, we turn our attention to the question, what is DS106? Why DS? Why 106? Uncle Jim tells us about the 107 Rebellion, and we send our roving reporter, Jess the Obscure, to shrink this question once and for all. And then, we go to one of the parts of the show I am most looking forward to. We shrink the question, what makes a tasty dessert? We will close the show with the DS106 Headless Shrink, warning us about the dangers of stories. Stories are dangerous? I think she needs her headless head examined. The Headless Shrink asks, should we be suspicious of stories? So that's the lineup for our show, and I hope that you enjoy it. Here we go!
This is DS106, Shrinking the Big Questions.
Tokitina and I recently had a nice conversation at the beach in the moonlight, talking about a very big question.
Hello, super true friend Christina. It is so nice to be back here on the beach with you. I have a question for you, Christina. The question that I would like you to answer is this. What is the answer to the question, what is the meaning of life? That is my question for you.
Wow, Tina, the meaning of life. That's not just a big question, it's the question. The one philosophers are supposed to have an answer to. Yes, I'm a philosophy professor, and in rare moments I might even call myself a philosopher, but I have no answer. So I'll do what many good philosophy professors do and tell you what some other philosophers have said. You've probably heard of Sisyphus, right? The one who had to ceaselessly roll a rock up a mountain, watch it fall down again, and roll it back up over and over and over and over and over.
Sisyphus Is that like where a cat will push around a ball? Or chase the sun if you have a mirror on a sunny day and the cat will go crazy? Because that is fun, except if you are the cat and you just keep doing it until you get tired. Besides, if it were me, I would go up the stairs on the mountain.
No, not you, Sisyphus, the one in Greek mythology. Why did he have to do this forever? He pissed off the gods in one way or another, depending on which version of the story you're looking at. In one version, he put death in chains so he wouldn't have to die. But then neither could anyone else, so this had to be remedied by the gods, obviously. Then, before Sisyphus died, he asked his wife not to bury his body, so that Hades, king of the underworld, wouldn't get the offering he normally should. Hades let Sisyphus return to life to chastise his wife, and then he refused to return to the underworld until the gods fetched him and forced him back. Albert Camus, 20th century French philosopher, says, in an essay called The Myth of Sisyphus, that Sisyphus clearly hated death, loved life, and scorned the gods and the absurd punishment they gave him. And so should we. You do all that, right, Tina?
Well, if he said the mean word at them, then I think he got what he deserved. I don't think that Zeus has much patience with that kind of thing. Plus, those lightning bolts of his really suit his up-on-the-mountain Olympics. Maybe he just wanted that boulder at the bottom and was trying to tell that sissy guy to just leave it where it was supposed to be. Or maybe he wanted him to learn about gravity. You know, like Newton did.
Sure, maybe so. But here's what Camus says. We too can become conscious of the absurdity of our lives, how our rocks are endlessly rolling. When we think of the vastness of the universe in space and time, when we recognize the indifference of this universe to us, when we face our own mortality, even when we stop in our daily routine and ask why, we can realize the absurdity of our lives. There is no meaning, or even if there is, we can't know it for certain. So then we can collapse in despair, or, like Sisyphus, scorn the absurdity of our position and keep living. Keep loving life, keep acting in the world, even though in the grand scheme of things it comes to and means nothing. Camus insists that one must imagine Sisyphus happy. Sisyphus recognizes the absurdity of his predicament, and yet revolts against it. He has no hope, but he also refuses to give in to despair. Camus describes him as a blind man eager to see who knows that the night has no end, who keeps saying yes to life. He makes meaning in what he is doing, makes his life, such as it is, his own. His fate belongs to him, Camus says. His rock is his thing. Camus invites us to ask, what meaning can we create rather than discover in life?
Well, Christina, when I visited my true friend, Old Hatchet Jack, on his mountain, he was kind of stuck doing the rock, too. So I kept doing Spock when we played Rochambeau. Maybe Sisyphus was having problems because he needed a true friend. Someone who could say, leave off with the rock today, Bob. Let's go grab a burger and make some art. It's not all about rolling stones. Let's just paint it black and then people can chalk it up with their experiences. That would be a nice art project for friends and not give you all those calluses and crushed toes.
You don't like that one? What, too depressing? Didn't you hear the part about being happy? Fine. How about another joyful philosopher, Friedrich Nietzsche? The one who said, what does not destroy me makes me stronger. Which, by the way, is my mantra right about now, since my own rock is rolling over the top of me lately. He's also the one who says that life is governed by a will to power. Sure, that means what you probably think it means, but also more than that. In On the Genealogy of Morality, Nietzsche says that the will of life is bent upon power. Life operates essentially, that is, in its basic functions, through injury, assault, exploitation, destruction, and simply cannot be thought of at all without this character. So yeah, that's what you expected from the will to power, right?
Well, I am strong and have a lot of power in me because of my ninja skills. Plus, if someone uses the mean word, you have to deal with them.
That's for sure. Nietzsche, though, also connects the will to power to being active rather than passive, to shaping things rather than being shaped, giving new directions to events and new interpretations to texts, beliefs, practices, and even life itself. So actually, in the end, it comes down to about the same thing as before. What's the meaning of life? What we make it to be. Or rather, what those with an active and effective will to power do. Which you have, right?
You bet, Christina. You are my super true friend. Plus, I made badges for my true friends. And a gift a day keeps the doctor away. So you can have lots of power to keep making your art interpretations and stop lacking.
So, Tina, one must imagine you happy.
I am happy. You see, all my true friends that I made badges for, and they are all happy to be my true friend too. So that makes them happy. And so having happy true friends is a good meaning of life. Plus, they have badges.
Are you feeling tired and weak? Do you feel lightheaded? Are you getting dizzy spells? Are you slipping in and out of consciousness? If you are experiencing one or all of these symptoms, it may be because you are not breathing. 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 Breathing is a safe and effective way of fighting death and death-related symptoms. Most doctors agree that breathing is an excellent way to stay alive.
Welcome to the Three T's of Cooking, where we explore taste, texture, and time, because we always have time for cooking, and time for true friends. This is the show where we answer the big question, what's for dinner? We shrink your budget, but expand your taste buds. We're your hosts, Rhonda Jessen and Karen Bossy Young.
Thanks, Rhonda. Today we're going to discuss DS-106, or as all of you so familiar with our cooking show know as, the Debrisna sausage and the 106 ways to cook with this delectable ingredient. Today we're going to discuss recipe number 4, salsa gruda, with Debrisna sausages, with an apple honey pie for dessert. Can't you just smell the apples, honey, and orange already? And please remember to check out our website ds106.us for more cooking tips after the show.
Sausages are a versatile way to shrink the cost of your food budget. Traditionally, sausage makers would salt various tissues and organs, such as scraps, organ meats, blood, and fat, to help preserve them, and then pack them in a casing made from intestines. Heidegger, our sausage maker, always says, "Philosophy is like the way you approach making sausage. You never know how it's made. And making itself intelligible is suicide for philosophy." Heidegger uses a lot of Hungarian paprika in his Debrisner sausages, as well as ham, while inferior sausage makers add a lot of other ingredients. We believe that Heidegger sausages are the very best. Debrisner sausages never shrink, and since they're already cooked, one just has to simply heat them up and add them to the salsa cruda. Our vegetable farmer Nietzsche is a fanatic about good quality fruits and vegetables. Only the best will do for Nietzsche. So today he's provided us with firm ripe tomatoes, which are great slicing tomatoes, as well as bell peppers, English cucumbers, and sweet onions, which form the backbone of this dish. Nietzsche regularly plays music to his plants, as he believes without music, life would be a mistake. No wonder these vegetables dance on our plate.
Now, while our vegetables form the backbone of our dish, with the Debrisna sausage adding a savory component to bring out the true brightness of the vegetables, fresh herbs are crucial to this dish. We get our herbs from Master Gardener Camus. Welcome, Camus.
Bonjour, Rhonda et Karen. Comment ça va? Herbs deserve to be planted over and over again. Like Sisyphus, I cannot stop. Today, I bring you garlic, thym, dill, et basil.
Thank you, Camus, for your wonderful herbs.
The final addition to the salsa cruda with Debonizer sausage is pasta. We get our pasta from the master of all products made from wheat, George Heigel, owner of Heigel's Bagels. Heigel is famously known for crossbreeding his own brand of wheat, Heigelian. As he says, nothing great in the world has ever been accomplished without passion. Heigel's passion for all things wheat is well known. He never shrinks from experimenting. Heigel makes his own pasta from only the finest Seminola wheat. We've chosen a penne pasta, which we will cook until al dente today.
So while your pasta water is heating and your Debrisner sausages are gently warming on the stove, roughly chop your tomatoes, green pepper, onions, and cucumber. I prefer to remove the seeds from the tomatoes, but it is a personal preference. Pour over the vegetables half a cup of good quality olive oil and toss with one clove of freshly minced garlic and a third of a cup of roughly chopped basil and dill and one tablespoon of thyme and allow the vegetables to marinate in the oil for at least 15 minutes.
In the last few minutes while the pasta is cooking, thinly slice the Debonizer sausages and add them to the salsa cruda. Drain the pasta, shake vigorously to remove the extra water, and add the pasta to the salsa cruda mix. Stir to coat the pasta with the sauce. You may add 1 cup of Parmigiano Reggiano cheese or feta to the dish just prior to adding the pasta if you like a cheesy flavor.
Bon appetit! We'll be back to discuss honey apple pie after a message from our sponsor.
True friends, this is me. I am Talkie Tina, speaking to you on DS106 Radio, where everything is for life. I'm just here to remind you to do the daily create and don't use the mean word. Remember, a gif a day keeps the doctor away. Get your art on, bub!
This is George Heigel from Heigel's Bagels, where we only use the finest Heigelian flour. If you like bagels, you'll only eat Heigel's.
Shrinking the big questions.
Hi everyone, my name's Jess. Tina, Mariana, I have a big question for you. Quite possibly one of the biggest questions you will ever be asked. Are you ready? Why is this course called DS106? And why is the number 106 so special? And what does DS stand for? I just don't understand what it all means. I'd really appreciate your help in unravelling this question. As a new member of the Headless 13, and this is my first attempt at DS106, I've had no luck so far in working this out. And believe me, I've Googled. I should probably explain why I'm particularly upset at not knowing the meaning behind the number 106. It's mainly because it's not 105. Ever since I can remember, I've had a weird thing about numbers. There's no real rhyme or reason to this, but perhaps our resident shrink can help me out there. I generally like even numbers. They're nice. They're divisible by 2. In fact, the number 2 is one of my favourites. It's not that I dislike odd numbers altogether. I think the number 1 is a pretty nice guy, and 3, that's a magic number, we all know that, and I'm a big fan of the 5 times table. But if I'm ever changing the volume on my TV or radio, I'll tune to the nearest 5 or 10. If there's a volume 10.6, I'll round that down to 10.5 or up to 11. If I have to choose a number for a parking space or a lottery ticket, I'll choose one of my favourite numbers, so mainly 2s or 10s or 5s. Anyway, I shouldn't let my weird number prejudices get in the way of a thorough investigation into the properties of the number 106.
Well, just by that, I think you mean Google search.
It's 5 more than 101, but no one would go near a DS101, I'm pretty sure of that one. It sounds quite good. I'll give it that much, it rolls off the tongue. 1066 is a pretty big date in British history.
You silly. That's not DS-106.
The Peugeot 106 is a super mini produced by the French automaker Peugeot from 1991 to 2004. Thanks, Wikipedia. Surely this course isn't named after a car, though, is it? Need to get from Finsbury Park to Cavell Street, London, or Spiders Nightclub in Hull to Cottingham? Well, try Bus Routes 106. Recently, exactly 106 lost 1960s Doctor Who episodes were rediscovered in Ethiopia. If you add up 1 and 0 and 6, you get 7. I'm not a big fan of 7, I'd rather round that up to 8 or 10 myself. Okay, now that I've thoroughly confused myself with a ton of random number facts, let's see what happens when you mess with the power of numbers, and particularly the power behind 106.
News on the march. Sectionalism rocks the Oblivionite camp as TA Jim Croom goes mad with power and banishes DS-106ers en masse. The family Oblivion bickers while DS-106 burns, and so clearly new leadership is needed. First martyr to the cause after the Oblivions is Araba, who was banished from DS-106 after questioning Groom's seemingly absolute authority. So let it be noted in the annals of history that DS-106 is hereby dissolved, its power over our minds illusory, and its message of total student domination illegitimate. From the ashes of DS-106 arises a new order, DS-107, led by none, controlled by none, for the benefit of all who seek relief from the oppression of the TA.
So, the revolution of DS-107, the basic overtaking of the class by a rogue group of students back in 2011, the summer of 2011. It was a fateful summer because what had happened is Dr. Oblivion went missing. Jim Groom, the TA, came into power. He became power hungry. He started banishing students from the class en masse. And as a result, the students took up arms and they formed a faction group called DS-107, which was loyal to Dr. Oblivion, who was missing, and who felt that Jim Groom was treating these students somehow unfairly. If you ask me, given I'm Jim Groom, I think that there was a certain amount of overreaction on the part of the students. But if you would ask Dr. Oblivion, I think he would agree that freedom is the only way to learn. If you're a teacher and you find that a group of students want to actually define the class for themselves and make what they're doing a part of who they are and what they are as a collective, that's the ultimate kind of victory. I mean, it's the ultimate in teaching, I think. So DS-107 was an amazing thing. And the Summer of Oblivion will always be near and dear to my heart. And part of why is because of the factional groups or factional students that made up DS-107. And that's that. Jim Groom signing off.
Sorry, everybody. I almost forgot the DS part. Well, we all know it stands for digital storytelling, don't we? That's what we're all here for. Well, sorry, that's not what I hear. I asked my Samsung Galaxy, though, just to make sure.
Hi, Galaxy. What does DS stand for?
Oh, you'll have to tell me.
Well, my Galaxy wasn't much help, but it doesn't matter, because I have it on great authority that the DS stands for nothing other than the Debreezener Sausage.
Do you feel like something is missing from your life? Are you finding yourself lacking in arts and lacking in friends? If so, it is time for you to add some DS-106 to your life. Plus, if you meet the necessary criteria as outlined on my web forum, iamtalkytina.com, you can even get a True Friends badge to say you are a true friend. Yes, all of these things and more can be yours if you join the DS-106 Digital Storytelling Community. Do it today! Check out www.ds106.us or www.iamtalkytina.com/truefriends. Well, bye! DS-106, for life!
Welcome back to the Three T's of Cooking Show, where we explore taste, texture, and time, because we always have time for cooking. And true friends! We've just finished making a fabulous De Prisoner sausage and salsa cruda pasta dish, and now we're working on dessert. Once again, this dessert is a budget pleaser. While it won't shrink your waistline, it won't debauch your wallet either.
Bossy, this is a fabulous dessert for fall, honey apple pie. I prefer to use a sweet cooking apple like a Macintosh or a Cortland or even a Jonathan if they're available. I get my apples directly from S. Freud Farms because he has an ongoing love affair with apples, pears, and peaches. He always says, whether the seed will ever bear any fruit, I do not know. But what I do know is that no other fruit has ever affected me in the same way. His fruit is always picked at the height of perfection, and he only sells the roundest, firmest, and juiciest apples to his customers, with all of the seconds going into making cider. Buying Freud's apples by the bushel is always a smart bet, as they keep well, particularly if stored in a cool, dry place.
And since honey is such a big part of our flavor profile for this dessert, we go to the king of the honey makers, Quintin Millesol. His bee farm is located far from urban districts on huge tracts of land, so he can practice organic honeybee farming. He is actually able to develop flavor profiles for each of his honeys. He believes in allowing his bees access to mad time. Time is not governed by the physical laws because it is the laws themselves which are governed by a mad time, he says. The honey produced from this mad time has a slightly acidic profile that marries well with the sweet apples.
For the pastry, once again, we'll source our ingredients from Heigl's Bagels, where you can buy flour or even ready-made pastry dough. If you want our recipe for foolproof pastry, we've posted it on our website, ds106.us.
Now we source all of our dairy products from Marx's Dairy Farm. Marx is a hard-working farmer whose land holdings go back generations. He has recently been expanding his production line of quality cheeses and butters. His old saying is, sell a man a pail of milk, he drinks for a day. Teach a man how to milk, you ruin a wonderful business opportunity. Carl has such a bourgeoisie sense of humor. He produces both cheeses and butters under the brand name Das Cow Milk, and they have won numerous awards at the Royal Fair. His butter is rich and creamy, with just a hint of grassiness.
I agree, Bossy. Roll out the bottom and place it in the pie pan. Roll out the top layer and cut it into 1-inch strips. Put these aside while you make the filling.
Peel the apples until you have 6 cups of sliced apples. Toss with 1/2 cup of sugar, 1 teaspoon of freshly grated nutmeg, and place in the prepared pan. Dot it with butter. Moisten the edge of the bottom pastry and begin to create the lattice pattern, remembering to flute the edges of the pastry and covering with aluminum foil, so it doesn't brown too much. Bake in a 425-degree oven for 50 minutes. Combine 1/2 cup of the Millesol Mad Thyme honey with 1 tablespoon of grated orange rind. Remove the pie from the oven and pour the honey through the openings in the lattice. Return the pie to the oven for 5 minutes.
And that's it! Pair the pasta with a Pinot Noir and the apple pie with a Riesling and a good block of Das Cow Milk sharp cheddar, and you've got a meal fit for a gathering of friends. As Nietzsche always says, a small garden, figs, a little cheese, and along with this, 3 or 4 good friends is a delightful way to spend an evening.
We hope you've enjoyed another episode of the Three T's of Cooking, where we explore taste, texture, and time, because we always have time for cooking and true friends. Thanks for listening to another episode of DS106 with us. I'm Karen, Bossy Young.
And I am Rhonda Jessen. Thanks so much for joining us. Next week, recipe number 5, Diebenizer sausages with mashed potatoes and sauerkraut.
Shrinking the big questions. Tyler Cohen occupies the Holbert C. Harris Chair of Economics as a professor at George Mason University. He is co-author of the popular economics blog Marginal Revolution. He currently writes the Economic Scene column for the New York Times and writes for such magazines as the New Republic and the Wilson Quarterly. When such an academic says that he is suspicious of stories and that stories make him nervous, I, for one, stop to listen.
We are all ready.
I was told to come here and tell you all stories, but what I'd like to do is instead tell you why I'm suspicious of stories, why stories make me nervous. And in fact, the more inspired a story makes me feel, very often the more nervous I get.
The more inspired I feel, the more nervous I get. Now, for us in DS106, this should give us cause to stop and reflect.
The good and bad things about stories is they're a kind of filter. They take a lot of information and they leave some of it out and they keep some of it in.
This resonates for me with what we talk about when we say that human understanding is metaphorical in some way. We filter information out, we filter information in. But by definition, we are foregrounding something. And when we do that, we are also forgetting about other things that may be in the background that may be relevant. So the idea of filter is interesting when we're thinking about what does it mean to tell an interesting story. Because by definition, the stuff that's messy, the stuff that's boring, the stuff that's run of the mill, we probably would choose to leave out.
Shrinking the big questions.
Tyler Cohen goes on to talk about an interesting piece of research, which I think links very clearly for us with the notion of a personal cyber infrastructure. He starts to talk about how in this bit of research where people were asked about their lives, they don't just say, my life is a mess, but actually they describe their life as story and different kinds of story. What's interesting for me about this is that there are certain archetypes, I guess, that are being used when we talk about the narrative of our life. Again, foregrounding some things and leaving some other stuff out.
And when asked to describe their lives, what's interesting is how few people said mess. But what people wanted to say was, my life is a journey. 51% wanted to turn his or her life into a story. 11% said, my life is a battle. Again, that's a kind of story. 8% said, my life is a novel. 5%, my life is a play. I don't think anyone said, my life is a reality TV show.
No, I guess I've never described my life as a reality TV show, but it is interesting for us to think about. You know, my life is it a journey? Is it a reality TV show? How do we think of our lives? And we sometimes come to therapy and to critical reflection and to any number of other things that help us look in the mirror and do some inner viewing, as a friend of mine is very fond of saying. We come to those things because we have a level of awareness of what it is that we don't know. All of the things that we that are in the background, that are in the unconscious mind, that we know we have not foregrounded in what is the narrative of our lives.
And pull back and say, what are the messages, what are the stories that no one has an incentive to tell? And start telling yourself those. So this idea like of hovering, epistemological hovering and messiness and incompleteness, and not everything ties up into a neat bow, and you're really not on a journey here. You're here for some messy reason or reasons.
So should we be suspicious of stories? Yes. Should we stop telling them? No. But hovering in terms of what we know and who we are, dealing with the uncertainty of life and staying with the ambiguity of that might be something that we can use to help us be better storytellers.
Shrinking the big questions.
Well, it has been so nice to be here with my true friends during this radio show. What do I think about dangerous stories? Well, I don't really say much about danger. I know that stories bring true friends together, and that in DS-106, we tell many stories. I also know that we are not dangerous. We can shrink any big question if we make art every day, and that, my true friends, is the meaning of life. How do you shrink the cost of food? How do you have tasty desserts? And how do you make sure stories are safe? Well, those are good questions. And I think the answer is DS-106. So, keep making art, bub! This is me, I am Talkie Tina, and my true friends from the Three T's saying goodbye! DS-106, for life!